Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Ohio General Assembly, for more than a decade, has gradually pared state funding to local governments from nearly $670 million in 2007 to nearly $350 million in 2017. The state cuts have forced local governments to make up the difference themselves or eliminate services altogether. Many point to the shrinking state support as evidence of a suburban/rural-urban divide in the legislature, where the GOP majority members in both houses largely hail from suburban or rural Ohio, and the Democratic minority from the big cities. The divide has been a longtime concern of the Ohio Municipal League, which in December called for restoration of state funds to local governments. Kent Skerritt is the executive director of the Ohio Municipal League. He joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch joins us by phone as well. Welcome, Jim.
Good morning.
There have always been lawmakers, Jim, from rural communities and others from urban centers. When did the divide start to take the shape in this way?
Well, it's actually gotten more pronounced if you're talking about a simple divide over who represents what type of areas. Uh-huh. In fact, in the current General Assembly, I believe I think 18 of the 38 Democrats are now located in just two counties, Franklin and Cuyahoga, in the House. And increasingly, especially after this last election, increasingly you're seeing Democrats representing the urban areas and the suburbs surrounding the major urban areas, and Republicans increasingly representing mid-sized cities, smaller towns, and rural areas across Ohio. So this divide is only actually increasing. It's a national trend that we're seeing, especially under the Trump era that we're in now, where he's not a very particularly popular president, but he is really unpopular in the suburbs, particularly among the educated, particularly among suburban women, and that is driving what had already started as the suburban areas had already started to turn a little more blue, but mm-hmm. I think he accelerated it with some of his rhetoric and policies.
And it makes a difference when it comes to policy making when the divide is not just ideological or by party, but also geographical, right?
Oh, absolutely. Obviously, major cities and their suburbs, they face a whole different set of circumstances than rural areas. The property values tend to be lower, the income bases tend to be lower, they tend to need more assistance, but just because of low tax bases. However, urban areas tend to have more issues and more expensive issues. When you're talking about crime and infrastructure, they have things that are more expensive that need to be paid for. And frankly, if you've got 60 people in your caucus and very few of them represent any of these major urban areas, you don't have a lot of voices when they close the door to stand up and talk about the importance of those type of things when it's time to make budget decisions.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the rural-urban divide in the Ohio General Assembly and how it manifests both in funding and in policy decisions. You just heard from Jim Siegel. He's a State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. He joins us by phone. Also with us, Kent Skerritt. He's executive director of the Ohio Municipal League, which is seeking to reverse the funding trends that have occurred over the past 10-plus years in the Ohio General Assembly. Kent Skerritt, from where you sit, working with the General Assembly, do lawmakers act as if there is a divide? Do they necessarily see it in that way?
We've had a number of conversations where it's been difficult to talk about the priorities of our larger communities versus our smaller. Sometimes it gets to a conversation on a political level of left and right. Mm-hmm. And Jim is right. The larger cities are represented primarily by members of the Democratic Party. And sometimes you get into turf war, and sometimes there's a conversation of the majority that is Republican doesn't feel comfortable in investing in some of the things that our bigger cities have to tackle.
Such as?
Some of it gets down to union issues. Uh-huh. We have a larger scale union operations in our larger communities. And philosophically, there have been conversations and times where the Republicans in the legislature feel that they're supporting unions and sometimes political competition, rising stars locally, that may challenge them in future elections. So it's hard to get through that conversation of the political divide when we're talking about the need for services, the need for the rebuilding of the partnership, and the value and the investment in our communities that affects the whole state. 80% of businesses are located in a city or village in Ohio. So we are the economic engines. And when you deinvest in our engines, you're taking away support for economic development.
Jim Siegel, how do you see it? I mean, do lawmakers, when you're talking to them, do they see it as a divide, or they say, hey, we're just doing our job?
Well, they, of course, don't. No one will admit to you, at least publicly, that there is any kind of a divide. They all say they're representing the state as a whole and doing what's best for Ohio. So, you know, but I mean, it's almost impossible not to have a divide when you do have such a stark contrast between what, you know, the types of areas that the majority represents versus the types of areas that the minority represents. I mean, the political divide is what it is across the state, but it's not particularly good. I mean, Ohio, for example, Franklin County, this last election, there were three suburban Republican seats that all went Democrat, which is fine. However, those were some Republican seats that tended to vote or tended to speak up at times against efforts to some of the changes that maybe the Republican majority wanted to do and would try to push back against some of these
because
things.
They represented more moderate districts.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So now we're getting less of that, it does matter. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I'm sure Kent could tell you all about all the efforts that have been made over the years to limit cities' abilities to pass local ordinances.
Well, I was going to say it's not just about money. I mean, state lawmakers have been trimming the sales of local government local government authority for years. Gun control, whether or not you can ban plastic bags, Kent Stewart,
and also the management of drilling rights. The state preempted our ability to control where fracking and where oil and gas drilling were taking place. It's really kind of antithetical to what the Republican majority in the legislature always espouses on keeping government smaller. The closer the people are to the government, the better. We've seen a substantial growth in the size and scope of the state government. And, we had always felt that our local communities do it better and that the size and growing of the state is not productive. So we continue to have that conversation on our constitutional rights that are bestowed upon municipalities for the ability to manage their affairs locally through the home rule. Mm-hmm. And it seems that we've had a lot of challenges to home rule when you talk about managing their local revenues through the municipal income tax, preemptions on small cell infrastructure, guns. The whole myriad of issues has grown the size of state government.
Right. I mean, yeah, Jim Siegel, I always think of that home rule, local control philosophy as emanating from the more rural, smaller areas that don't want big city governments telling them what to do. And I'm wondering, do they talk about it in those terms in the Ohio General Assembly?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, there is a difference. The bigger cities tend to be the ones that want to pass some of these ordinances that guns and other things, obviously because guns are more of an issue in bigger urban areas. And the smaller towns, they don't see the need to try to do this, so the lawmakers representing those areas don't see the need to do that kind of thing, and they'd rather have a uniform standard across the state. But like you said, there is some issues. I think one of the issues dealing with, we're talking about bigger cities versus smaller, like there's issues with water and water services, for example. How much are the big cities charging the suburban areas and smaller communities for water, and should there be some limits on that? That issue has been debated for a few years now, and So there are issues like that that do crop up.
Can either of you tell me and talk about where the local government fund? It's a line item in the state budget, or was. I don't even know if it's still there anymore. But where it came from, Jim Siegel? It's a Depression era tool, right?
You know what? You're trying to get me to jog my memory on history.
Kent might Skerritt, be better. I mean, to it's it came one. From it was to stabilize local governments in times of great uncertainty.
Well, it was instituted in 1930. We've had this covenant with the state and its local partners since 1930. It was a result of Ohio instituting the sales tax. Okay. And they realized that now that Big Brother is getting into taxation and sales, it's going to compromise the ability of local communities to raise revenue locally. So there was this partnership that was forged to support our communities for this new competition in tax and revenue generation. And unfortunately, from our perspective, unfortunately, when Governor Kasich came in, he really curtailed that revenue sharing relationship by about 50%. Almost $500 million was cut. And to date, we've lost about $1.8 billion. And the elimination or the cutback of the LGF, which is the local government fund, the elimination of the Ohio estate tax, which was about $250 million directly to our municipalities mm-hmm. where these states were located, the accelerated phase out of the tangible personal property tax, and then changes to the municipal income tax. And Ohio is unique because we have each city and village is allowed to institute their own income tax. We have about 600 municipalities that have that local revenue generator. And it's been such more importance has been put on the local on the municipal income tax revenue because of those cuts that have come from the state. So it's a myriad of issues. On top of that, the economic slowdown, the recession, and the recovery that many communities still continue to struggle with. So it's a wide berth of issues that have impacted our municipalities financially, has caused our local tax rates to go up, reduction of services, and of course, the staffing of our community offices, administration offices have been cut.
And Jim Siegel, what are the expectations now that we enter this new era of Mike DeWine at the helm of state government? What are your expectations, or what do we know about his promises to local governments?
Well, I think I think local officials are much more they're looking forward to seeing what he's going to do, and they believe that they can have a better relationship with him than they had with the Kasich administration. As Kent said, I mean, Kasich really had a philosophy, and it was backed by his budget director that the state of Ohio should not be in the business of redistributing tax dollars back to local governments, and so there was always a resistance for him to do that, and also he had very little sympathy for local governments and their plights. They constantly put out messaging about they felt like local governments were using the state as a crutch whenever they needed to try to raise local taxes finding other ways. Kasich was just not sympathetic toward the local governments and the issues they had. I think a number of officials believe that the DeWine administration will be more open to trying to do more. And another issue that came up that this affects counties, but in addition to all the things that Kent mentioned in terms of funding losses, there was the Medicaid sales tax also went away, which I think was about a $200 million hit for counties.
Mm-hmm. Has it been the case, Kent Skerritt, that you mentioned some cities have increased taxes? But is there any kind of larger trend of that, or is it just anecdotal, or has it been the case that people are paying more money at the local level instead of at the state level?
They are paying more money, and you know, our members, we have 750 members. By and large, about 60% of our members have gone to the ballot to try and raise revenue. Some have been successful. Some have not been successful. There's been, policies of attrition where the positions are not filled in our communities. Safety services have been cut. A number of our police forces are not at the level where they previously were because they cannot afford to bring people back on. So you know, it's a wide sweeping challenge, but the effects not only on the tax rates are, you know, our members are loath to go to the ballot and increase local taxes because they know that the pressures that are already existing on our residents.
Well, they're already asking for it at the school level. The schools are asking right. for it. Townships are often asking for it than cities.
Absolutely. But it's also, you know, price, the fees are going up for on different delivery of services, on agreements that, not to get too technical, but if you work and live in two varying municipalities and pay two municipal income taxes, your home community often gave you a credit for where you right. were paying, where you worked. Now those credits have gone away because they need to generate revenue. And so where there was zero, 100% credit or 50%, now often many communities have gone to zero credit mm-hmm. because they're forced to really try and recover financially.
Jim Siegel, I know we have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Yep, no problem.
Jim Siegel, State House reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Still with us, Kent Skerritt. He's executive director of the Ohio Municipal League. We're talking about, how the cities are faring in this era of big state government. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Ohio General Assembly has been trimming state funding to local governments for more than a decade, forcing cities to make up the difference or eliminate services altogether. Many say the funding cuts are part of a larger suburban, rural, and urban divide in the legislature. Still with us is the executive director of the Ohio Municipal League, which represents 750 members, Kent Skerritt. Thanks again, Ken, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Also joining us now is Executive Director of the Ohio Mayors Alliance, which represents top elected officials from the state's big cities, Kerry McCarthy. Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Why the need for a Mayors Alliance?
Well, I think one of the things that was really important was to make sure that the mayors themselves were down here and engaged with what's happening in the state capitol. I think there are some serious divides in the legislature with our big cities, as you've talked about. But I think it's just really important that we get the mayors directly involved and to build relationships, not just with state senators and representatives that represent their regions, but also the legislative leaders, which come from other parts of the state. And so, you know, really trying to utilize this alliance to help create opportunities to better communicate the challenges and opportunities of Ohio cities is really important.
Back a long time ago when I covered the General Assembly, Vern Reif was the speaker. He was from a rural area. He was a Democrat. There was sort of this natural connection because of that. I think he wielded a lot of power, obviously. He was the most powerful speaker ever. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that people from different parts of the state don't know and don't understand the issues?
I think that's the case. I mean, I think there's a communications gap sometimes, I think, on issues. And I think what we're trying to do is to support the work that the Municipal League does and really help to bridge that gap and really help. What we've really tried to communicate is that, you know, cities are the engines of economic growth in the state of Ohio. They drive the economic activity in the major metropolitan regions, and that we can't have a strong state without strong cities and strong local governments. And that's really the sort of the message that we've tried to communicate to lawmakers.
And we were talking earlier that traditionally, historically, that's been a message. Strong local government, local control, home rule has been a Republican mantra traditionally over the years. I'm trying to figure out, you know, when that started to change. And was it just about money and guns and plastic bags or what?
Well, you know, I think it's evolved over the years. I think you know, term limits has a little bit to do with it as well, because you have you cede a little power to the special interests when you limit the ability of lawmakers to really understand the state, the system, not just their communities that they represent, but the state of Ohio as a whole. So you cede some power to special interest. And then, you know, for special interests who have a particular issue they're trying to drive, whether it's plastic bags or guns or any
drilling
other
rights,
issues
yeah.
that, yeah, might impact home rule, you have an opportunity to, you know, to advocate for your issue on a statewide basis, never mind if it sort of undermines Ohio's constitutional right to home rule.
You know, when we were preparing for this show, we worked very hard, the producers worked very hard to find somebody to speak for the quote-unquote other side or other sides of this. And you can't find anybody that's going to sit here and say, I'm for cutting funding to local governments. I'm for a limit, you know, cutting power to local governments and home rule and that kind of a thing. So what's the lexicon that you use, Kent Skerritt, then in dealing with these issues? How do you talk about it?
Well, I can tell you that the Ohio Municipal League is part of the National League of Cities, and each state has a municipal league. So I attend many conferences and coordinate with a lot of the other league directors. These preemptions are happening across the country.
Okay.
Ohio is not unique that we're having the sales trim.
It maybe is more noticeable because there's so many big cities in Ohio.
We are very, you know, I think we're blessed to be very municipal-centric in our state, and I think that leads our success. And as Carrie mentioned, the economic vitality of our state is really surrounded around our cities and villages where 80% of businesses are located. So there's some coordinated activity going on nationwide by larger special interests that want to see these changes state by state.
Okay.
But Ohio is unique because we have a very strong home rule authority.
So it's been a little tougher.
It has been. Hmm. And some of those feel, you know, I think there's some interests that go after Ohio first, because we're the harder nut to crack, if you will, because of our constitutional authorities. But we've just seen a steady increase of preemptions, and some of the preemptions have been kind of ridiculous in our mind. And it really curtails the ability of our local residents to influence the complexity and the needs of their own communities. Ohio is not a cookie cutter. You cannot mm-hmm. have a cookie cutter approach to our cities and villages' success. And not having that cookie cutter approach is the rights of home rule and the rights of our residents to really influence the direction and policy of our local leaders.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. You just heard from Kent Skerritt. We're talking about this divide that has emerged in the Ohio General Assembly. We couldn't find anybody to come up and talk about why a divide would be good. Kent Skerritt of the Ohio Municipal League and also Carrie McCarthy of the Ohio Mayor's Alliance want to talk about why it's not working for the state of Ohio. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Iris in North Linden, you're on the air. Hi, Iris.
Hi. I have a rather complicated question, and I'm going to explain it slowly.
Okay, but
the American, but, yes, go ahead.
American Legislative Exchange Council, right.
Right, and John Kasich was a long-term involved individual.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the involvement of ALEC was to modify how the taxes in individual states were collected.
And is this Kent Skerritt, what you were talking about when you were talking about those larger special interests?
Yes, ma'am.
The ALEC, or the American Legislative Exchange Council, is just exactly what it sounds like. They use cookie cutter approaches to lots of different issues, and some of them work easily and others are fought, but it is something that's at a national level. It's funded by special interest groups. They actually have lawmakers come in and work together, and they take on legislation from ALEC, for short.
And we have members of the legislature that are on the board of directors of ALEC.
In Ohio.
Right.
Right, yeah. Iris, glad you pointed that out. Thanks a lot for that call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Which kinds of municipalities have felt the biggest impact from the state's lack of support or the dwindling support? The state, Kerry McCarthy?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, we are the Ohio Mayors Alliance is a bipartisan coalition. We represent the 30 largest cities from Columbus, which has, you know, over 800,000 in population, to Lima, which is the smallest, which has about 37,000. So we actually have a pretty good range of community types within our coalition. And, you know, when we look at the numbers, and I think Kent mentioned them in the previous section, not just the local government fund cuts, but the variety of other policy changes that have had some financial impacts on our cities, it's the smallest cities that get hit the hardest from those cuts
they
as
don't
a
have
share
the
of their
of
overall
scale?
Budget.
Is that
right.
Why?
Yeah, as the overall share of their budget. You know, you look at Middletown, who is out in Western Ohio, Southwestern Ohio, you know, as a share of their budget, these cuts in total represent a pretty significant chunk of their total municipal budget. So the lack of these revenue sharing programs and the sort of diminishing the cuts that have occurred over the years tend to affect the smaller mid-sized communities more than they do the big communities. But it's a problem across the board, of course.
And when you talk about, you refer to it as a covenant that the state has with the cities going back to 1930. Mm-hmm. It's a law, right?
Right. The LGF, Local Government Fund, was 3.68% of the general revenue fund for the state, and that's been cut to 1.66. Mm-hmm. So it is in statute that this revenue sharing continues to exist, but it has been significantly curtailed.
And when it was curtailed during the recession, that made sense. We had zero in the rainy day fund at the state level. That was the thing. What was the argument then? It was just a philosophical argument after that point, is what you're saying, Kent Skerritt.
Well, that's right. And the attitude, well, if I can hearken back to those days, we heard a lot, either get on the bus or get run over.
Yeah.
And that was disheartening because that didn't feel like there was a spirit of cooperation there. But certainly, you know, these cuts have been disproportionate on our smaller communities. Kerry makes an excellent point. It is a larger overall total of their budget. And a lot of these smaller communities were already on the fiscal edge before when we were going through the recession. So this
their
was just—
Their own, and right. Besides the local government fund, their
businesses were leaving.
Yeah.
They weren't coming back. And then this was just kind of a kick in the teeth to say, okay, municipalities, in our case, you're on your own. You know, have your people prioritize what's important to them and then let them pay for it. Well, that's very disingenuous and you know, in the scope of fairness. Communities, you know, a lot of communities don't have the wherewithal to make these decisions. And we're now in a situation where we are donors to the state. We're not getting revenue back. We're not getting support back from the state that we're contributing to mightily.
Yeah, go ahead,
and
Kerry.
I would just say, you know, underscoring why this is important is, and when we talk about the urban-rural divide that exists in our state, and it's very real, the local government fund plays a very important role in ensuring that those rural communities that have been hollowed out by automation, globalization, communities like Kent and I's hometown of Newark, which have, you know, experienced the loss of manufacturing jobs the last 50 years, the local government fund is critically important to help offset some of the more dramatic impacts that occur when communities like Mansfield and Lorain and Springfield and Newark and all these mid-sized industrial communities lose major employers. The local government fund plays a critically important role in that. And that's really how I think we need to be thinking about bridging that urban-rural divide, thinking about the local government fund as one mechanism to do it, to support local communities, particularly those hard hit in our economy.
So we're going from a relatively big city governor. I mean, he lives in Westerville. He's been in big cities most of his adult life, to a longer-term entrenched state kind of yeoman in the state government, Mike DeWine, who nonetheless hails from a very rural Greene County. Any sense, Kerry McCarthy? I asked Kent Skerritt if there was with the changing of the leadership, if there's any hope.
I think so. We had our year-end meeting with the mayors in December, and Governor-elect DeWine and Lieutenant Governor-elect Husted both came to that meeting. It was a very productive and I think positive meeting. I think, you know, when we think about the local government fund in terms of the economic conditions across Ohio, I really think that both Governor-elect DeWine and Husted
understand the important role that local governments play in our economy, particularly as the economy is going to continue to change with technology and the sort of Uberization of our economy. It's going to have dramatic impacts on workers. And I think that this new administration, I'm very optimistic about this new administration's understanding of that and their interest in working with local communities to make sure that workers are respected and that when we have an economic setback, it doesn't create a, you know, a massive hole in the economic in the regional economy and in some of our parts of our state.
Lieutenant Governor-elect John Husted is going to be put in charge of Innovate Ohio, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. No one's really sure what it's going to do, but that kind of speaks to what you're talking about,
right,
as far as the just the modernization and the automation mm-hmm. piece of all of this. Do you have a sense that they're interested in filling in those gaps that you talked about being hollowed out?
I do. There's one area in particular where I think there's real opportunity, no pun intended, to work with Innovate Ohio in this role, which is the newly created Opportunity Zones, which is a product mm-hmm. of the federal tax reform bill. Almost every major municipality in the state, medium-sized to larger, have Opportunity Zones. They qualify for financial investments. I think there's a real opportunity to partner with the administration or cities to make sure that we get investment dollars into these hard-hit areas of our cities, not just sort of the communities that are already doing well, where it's going to have, you know, the sports venues.
Better, yeah.
But to get them in the places like Springfield, like Marion, like Lorain, like Elyria, these communities that don't necessarily attract all the attention of private sector investment. But I think the opportunity for partnership is to make sure that we lift up those opportunities to investors and we bring dollars into communities that are particularly hard hit by various economic conditions.
You are listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. That's Kerry McCarthy. He's executive director of the Ohio Mayor's Alliance. It represents top elected executives from big cities in the state. Everything from Columbus to Middletown, Ohio. We're going to be hearing from the mayor of Middletown coming up, Larry Mulligan Jr. Also with us, Kent Skerritt. He's executive director of the Ohio Municipal League. If you have a question or comment about the divide in the Ohio General Assembly and how that's being and is manifest in funding priorities and in issues such as local control and home rule, a tenet of Ohio governing since the second Constitution was written. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. We're talking about the relationship between local and state government in Ohio. Still with us is Executive Director of the Ohio Municipal League, Kent Skerritt. Middletown, a southwestern Ohio city of 48,000, has lost 10% of its overall revenue in recent years, in part due to state funding cuts. Joining us now is Middletown Mayor Larry Mulligan Jr. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, for a lot of people, when we say 10% of the city's revenue, doesn't mean a lot to, you know, it doesn't mean a lot to me. It doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people. What does it mean to have that kind of a cut when it comes to Ohio local government's fund?
Well, sure. Just to put it in perspective, Ann, mm-hmm. our general fund budget is about $30 million. So that represents, you know, $3 million that we lost in terms of local government fund revenue coming back from the state, as well as the reduction in the state tax that was made. So those are some pretty big hits. You know, our budget is centered around personnel. About 86% of it goes to just funding personnel. And really of that, big chunk of that is public safety. We spend, you know, close to $20 million in our current public safety budgets for police and fire. So that's a pretty significant amount. And then we're also, you know, dealing with some postponed infrastructure issues with a pretty significant number we've got to tackle for our roads. That total is estimated to be $160 million. to bring our roads back up to par over the next 20 years. So, you know, having that $3 million out of the budget makes it especially challenging.
You know, back when Governor Kasich entered the governor's office 8 years ago, he talked about working with municipalities, in other words, to overcome these cuts from the state, to get municipalities, cities, townships, counties working together to form more efficient, provide services more efficiently. What's your sense about how that's worked, Mayor Mulligan?
Our success has been somewhat limited. We're centered between Dayton and Cincinnati, a pretty good-sized corridor along I-75. The opportunities for collaboration, we've tried to do some stuff with our 911 dispatch, but, you know, that's also a challenge. You know, a lot of people expect service to be delivered locally. Our 911 dispatch center also is our 24-hour center in our police department, so it would be very difficult for us to give that up, for example. The other challenge we're working through and still looking at is our jail. We're one of a few cities in Ohio, that municipalities, that operates a city jail. Most are at the county level. But we're also, 30 minutes from the county seat in Hamilton. So to, deal with transportation of criminals, things like that, for a municipal court, that presents some logistics and challenges that are just, different, unique to Middletown and Butler County, but something that some situations, other situations don't necessarily face. So we've had some successes in the region in terms of collaboration, but it's also, there are some challenges where people want to have those services delivered locally.
Kent Skerritt, what's your sense about how that philosophy of not compromise, but working together to create efficiencies in local government, how did that go? We heard a lot about it the first year or so and not so much after that.
Well, Governor Kasich was not the one that invented this idea of regionalism and cooperative agreements.
Right.
Our communities had been doing that for years. We have been looking to maximize opportunities to work together, sharing equipment, sharing resources. The mayor rightly recognized the 911 center, and that's been an area where a lot of collaboration, regional cooperation has taken place. Our folks did that previous to Governor Kasich coming in. We continued that trend. Not only by force because of the reduced revenue, but it made sense in a lot of areas. The mayor is not unique in some of the isolation of some of our communities. It doesn't make sense, or it doesn't make the efficiency goal, reach the efficiency goals in collaboration when their partners are dispersed. So we have been doing that before 2010, just smart management of our local resources and collaborative agreements. And so we really had done that to the fullest extent that we could before the efficiencies weren't being reached on other areas. So the governor talked about, we're going to create all these regional compacts.
Everyone's going to share pencils, and why have a different person in every city ordering
right.
staplers?
But we were doing that before. Mm-hmm. We were doing that before with our reduced budgets, with the consequences of the economic recession. Our folks continued to do that without the prodding of the governor, where it made sense. And it's really kind of run its course in a lot of areas. There are still some opportunities that are being thought about, but it was not the panacea of this will fix your problem with the reduced revenue that we're creating. We're going to give you more. We had been doing that before.
And Mayor Mulligan, outgoing Republican Governor John Kasich has been quoted as saying, we have a constant whining from local governments. They want handouts. They want it to be easy. What is your reaction to that kind of those kind of remarks?
It's a little disappointing. I think we operate our budget pretty fiscally responsibly. We don't have deficits at the local level, and that's really where a lot of the services are delivered throughout the state, especially on the public safety side, police and fire. And it's not that we're looking to hand it out. We have some real needs in terms of our capital budgets to maintain our streets, our infrastructure. We're dealing with issues at the state and federal level with EPA settlements in terms of our combined stormwater issues. Those all put a burden on our local cities. And I'm certainly want Ohio to be a strong state. I understand we need to be competitive in the nationwide and worldwide marketplace. But a lot of the services and responsibility falls on the local entities, and we need to make sure those are strong and supported well.
I didn't check, Mayor Mulligan, in the Ohio General Assembly, who represents your districts. I mean, are they Republican, Democrat?
Republican. We have Senator Coley, and then who represents most of Butler County.
Mm-hmm.
Middletown covers both Middletown and parts of Warren County, so we have Senator Wilson there, and then our local representative is Candace Keller.
So do you have these conversations with them?
We do have some ongoing discussions, and I think they're sympathetic. You know, Candace is a relatively new member of the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. She was just reelected. You know, she's a Middletown resident. She sees firsthand some of the issues we're dealing with, and it is a bit of a balancing act. I don't envy their position, but I think now that the state's reached their their rainy day fund level of mm-hmm. I think it's approaching $3 billion. You know, I think it's time that cities begin to understand and benefit from some of that coming back to us and are supported, so we can begin to cover some of these deficits that we've been really putting off. I mean, it's it's amounted about $10 million over, the past 10 years or so that we've had to forego in terms of our lost local government fund revenue, and that have a pretty significant impact in getting some projects done in Middletown.
And when we're talking about infrastructure, there's going to be the added issue of the fact that the bonds from the Turnpike are running out of money. I mean, they're getting to the point where they've spent the revenue generated from selling those bonds. Can't sell them again.
No.
Yeah. Ken Skerritt, I mean, is there a concern? Because a lot of cities like Middletown have put off infrastructure, roads and bridges improvements because of this.
Infrastructure is about the quality of life, and it's about the health of our communities. And our communities are the economic engines of Ohio. So when you de-invest in our economic engines, and one of the areas that has not received support is infrastructure, mm-hmm. that is about economic development, about being attractive, being a good host for retaining and competing for new jobs. So infrastructure is a huge conversation that we'll be having in this General Assembly.
Transportation budget's first out.
Absolutely. But, infrastructure is above ground and below ground,
right,
as well. The mayor talked about EPA mandates that are crippling a number of our communities because they're so onerous and large, they don't have the financial resources to comply, both on the state and federal level. But our roads are really what people see.
Yeah.
The deteriorating quality of our infrastructure really challenges our ability to be competitive on an economic level. Almost every state in the union has done something to address infrastructure and the infrastructure challenges. Ohio has not.
But that was supposed to be the Turnpike bonds.
The Turnpike bonds was one result of the infrastructure issue, but we are looking for new revenue, and we need an infusion of new revenue. I'll just say that it's important to realize that the new speaker, Larry Householder, was previous speaker of the Ohio House, and he was the last speaker to be there when they instituted a gas tax increase. So I think, Speaker-elect Householder understands the challenges of our communities and the need for that investment in infrastructure. We need an infusion of revenue coming back in our community. If it's going to be part of the local government fund or the investment in infrastructure, there has to be a leaning in from the state, giving us an opportunity to rebuild with us.
So I'm glad you brought up Larry Householder. I'm talking about the leadership in the governor's office, but Larry Mulligan Jr., any sense as far as mayor of Middletown having a change of leadership in the House? Is this an important change for you?
Well, I don't know. We directly deal with the leadership in the mm-hmm. House or the Senate. We focus primarily on our local representatives. But again, it's a new opportunity, a new page. So I think hopefully we can reset the discussions and make sure the needs of the cities across Ohio are understood and communicated in both the House and the Senate here locally.
You said the last gas tax increase was under the watch of Larry Householder when he was Speaker previously, 2003, 2005, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah, about 20.
Yeah, and he just that makes you hopeful because he won't be he understands the need for that, and he may do it again.
He has demonstrated that he was a Perry County commissioner before coming to the Ohio House.
Small, rural Ohio.
Very
yeah.
challenged. They need an investment in infrastructure, and he understands that. I think it's important, too.
throughout the past General Assembly, we had positive conversations with members of the legislature about the need to reinvest and the need to return dollars back in our communities. But the conversation was always muted because the administration said, we're not doing that. So it really curtailed the ability to have productive conversations with a member of the majority, Republicans, who want to do something. Now we have what seems to be a Governor-elect DeWine who understands the need to rebuild that partnership and the value of the state investing in our communities and rebuilding our communities. And we have members of the legislature who I think are ready to do that and have some ideas on how to do that. We're not going to see a full restoration of the local government fund. It's not going to go back to 3.68 where it was before. But I think there's going to be a concerted effort to bring dollars back, maybe targeted and investing in our communities. And one target investment can be through the investment of infrastructure.
We've been largely focused on the money piece of this, Mayor Mulligan, but there is other things just in terms of governing and local control and home rule and that kind of issue, from everything from gun control to drilling rights and that sort of a thing. Are those things of a concern to you in a place like Middletown?
It goes back and forth, honestly. There are certainly some areas that are important for us to be able to have our local rule, local home rule. And it concerns me when we see that being pulled away from us ever so slowly. One issue that comes to my mind is the red light cameras and that kind of got pulled away.
Lots of examples, again,
That was one that on the financial side, we weren't out for, trying to generate a whole lot of revenue. But it did, but it also increased, safety at some of the intersections, and it's using technology. So, I'm a little disappointed sometimes when they pull things away that, local folks find that are good solutions to problems. And then we're left trying to figure out a new solution on limited budgets. And, I get a lot of calls on, speeding on local streets. And right now that requires us sending an officer out in a cruiser, and it'd be a whole lot easier to use technology to be able to enforce some of that stuff and bring it under control.
Are any of those things necessarily, Kent Skerritt, going to come back?
Well, the bag tax was not successful in the last General Assembly. I think we'll see that come back. The governor in the last budget instituted the centralized collection of the municipal net profit, which is a component of the municipal income tax. There are special interests around the General Assembly for 20 or 30 years who have wanted the state to collect all of the municipal income tax revenue from each of the 600 communities centrally, which represents about $5 billion in municipal income tax revenue, centrally collected and redistributed back to those communities. And that is a very frightening proposition for our membership when you cede the control of your local revenue and your ability to manage it and put your faith that the distributions will come back timely, will come back in the right amount that is, generated from each community. When you lose control of what is, for the 600 municipalities that have the income tax, that represents about 70% of their general revenue fund. And 70% of that goes towards safety forces. So when your dollars are going up to Columbus and then coming back at whatever distribution formula or amount, that is very challenging when we're trying to deal with the delivery of services on a daily basis as businesses and residents to expect.
Perhaps another covenant down the road that could be changed to suit the purposes of the larger power.
Well, in our view, the camel's nose is under the tent. They've got the net profit component of centralized collection, and there are those forces at the State House that say, get it all. Manage our, that the state can manage our local dollars better than our own communities. And that goes to the home rule. That goes to the ability to control what is the lifeblood of our communities. And instead of being beholden or being subject to a carrot and stick approach that, we'll give you back your revenue if you do this, that, or the other, or you don't do that, that just cedes control, that our communities have right now to a larger state government.
Kent Skerritt, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Kent Skerritt, Executive Director of the Ohio Municipal League, and Mayor Larry Mulligan Jr. of Middletown, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you.